människor.
Modiga människor.
Modiga människor.
Yes, hello Dorian.
How'd you do?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And I'm so glad you're with us from Spain. And for the Swedish audience that doesn't know about you, you're a former six-time Mr. Olympia. And
yeah. For those people that don't know, Mr. Olympia is like the premier professional bodybuilding title, I guess, like, you know, world heavyweight champion in boxing or whatever. It's like the undisputed, this guy that wins this contest is the best professional bodybuilder in the world. That's what that title is, really. Yeah.
I realize that I speak to someone who's like an icon for the people who've been following this and and are in this industry. Me, who haven't, I hardly know anything about that, because I met you for a coffee in Spain and we talked about other things.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, the most interesting that...
It's something that maybe started as a smaller subculture for men, bodybuilding and strongman and bodybuilding competitions. You know, it's been around always since the Victorian times. There's been strongmen and bodybuilders, but really, I guess it got going in the 70s and into the 80s after Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was a former Mr. Olympia, who made a documentary called Pumping Iron, and then he's in a lot of Hollywood movies as well. Many factors over the years that's turned it into now. It is really a big industry. The gym and fitness industry is much bigger than just bodybuilding right now. It's many more people going to the gym, big commercial gyms. So the whole thing's changed from the roots of being a small subculture to being a big industry, as you say now.
And I mean, I've seen pictures of you from your former career. What made you doing that? I mean,
well, it's a progressive thing. Like a lot of young guys, when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, I admired, you know, big, strong men with physiques, and wanted to be like that, I guess, like a lot of people. And I also followed Bruce Lee with the martial arts, and that was kind of part of my upbringing, and wanted to do push-ups and squats and went to the gym, and I just fell in love with the process of putting the work in and seeing the changes in the body. And it evolved from that interest to being really a sport, and then from being a sporting passion into being a full-time professional sport. So yeah, it's something very progressive, and it's like the very tip of an iceberg, if you like. It's very extreme professional bodybuilding. It's the human body taken to its extreme of muscular development. And for many people that might look, well, that's too much, but it is what it is. That's the competition. Is not necessarily about, at this point, having a nice looking body. That's great. But this is about, you know, how far can we take it? So that's pretty much.
You took it far. I mean, you were huge.
I took it to generally accepted new levels of muscular size combined with very low body fat and so on. And it was a real, as I say, it's a combination kind of sporting, an obsession and interest in all the factors in the training, how hard can you push yourself, in the nutrition, at least when I did it, not now, because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of coaches and nutritionists and so on that's around. But back then, we had to learn all that ourselves. And I find that process fascinating. And that process taught me that I can really learn anything and do anything if I focus on it, because learning things like that at school was not of interest to me, because the subjects were not interested and the system was not interesting, and I felt the whole thing was wrong. So I didn't learn so well at school. But afterwards, I learned I had the ability to do it as long as the subject was interesting. So there's a whole journey in there, as well as the, you know, a personal journey, as well as just building a body.
Yeah, but yeah, and the thing is, and I'm so interested in this, the mind. I mean, you really showed yourself and the world that if you create this image and this picture, I mean, you can really go to any length you want.
Yeah, that's what's of interest to myself at the moment. I really think at some point there is no limit, there is no length, but how you get there, where that is, I'm still working on that. But what I can tell you is that I had this dream that was in my head all day, every day, that I was going to change my life. I was going to travel the world. I was going to win competitions. And I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about the process of how I was getting there. What's my next workout? What am I supposed to eat tomorrow? Et cetera, et cetera. So it's really about focusing your attention on something. And I did it in an almost tunnel-like vision, where to the detriment maybe of some other things that I didn't have time or focus for, because you're putting it all into that. So definitely, if you focus on something and you really believe it, that's going to massively increase the chances of it happening.
Yeah.
If you don't believe it,
it won't happen.
There's a guarantee there. I can't say a guarantee. If you really focus on something and you put all your energy into it, that is guaranteed to happen, because there's a lot of factors, but it's much more likely to happen. You're creating that possibility. You're attracting that energy to it. I mean, you know, I'm not a scientist, but quantum physics now, they're saying, you know, the observation of is actually creating something. When there's no focus there, nothing's happening. So I kind of found out my own way, and pretty much my belief is that we kind of create everything that's happening to us.
Yeah, I mean, you're living proof of it.
Most of the time it's unconscious, so that's the thing. Most of the time, we're not even conscious about what we're thinking. So that's really kind of like the art, I think, is to be able to be aware of your thoughts.
And, but you mentioned school before.
Yeah.
And for me, I have three children from the age 5, 8, and 12. And I can really see the damaging the school is doing to, I mean, I...
Indoctrination, and it's is a system to produce a product, and the product is a worker with limited, you know, thought patterns. They don't teach anyone to be an individual or to play to your strengths, or, I mean, you know, don't even really teach much relevant information that you need in life. I mean, what's money? Where does it come from? How do you handle it? What's finance? I mean, they don't tell you anything about that at school, but you're going to be faced with that practical situation. But it seems like there's no interest in having you learn about these things, because it's not useful for the system. So I always just, I mean, what I really am convinced of and what I know about the school system now is what I felt when I was younger. I just felt like a lot of us, this isn't right. We're not supposed to be doing this when I'm supposed to be here? It's just a feeling that some people have inside. And I always had that feeling of being rebellious against what kind of, you know, road you're being forced down to. This is your life. Like, this is what you're going to be. Very limiting and very controlling, because there's no interest in the control system of people being like really free and free thinking and strong and healthy or any of those things, because if they're all those things, then they're very hard to control. And surely if you're controlling the system, you don't want that.
But for me, I mean, you really kind of took yourself out from that way of thinking.
A whole system, because I just lived my dream. And, you know, I went to the gym and I trained and I lifted weights and I did competitions. And that's how I made my life. And that's how I, you know, I'm living next door to stockbrokers and people like that, you know. Every day was my day. I chose to be very disciplined with my day and to achieve these goals, but it was my choice to do that. I was in control of that. I was in control of my life as much as I could be. So I found a way that was not the way you're supposed to do it, so to speak.
Are you still as disciplined?
I am. I have that quality, and I, you know, I like to keep in shape and eat good and everything like that. But I'm much more. I think I got to a point in my life where the main thing I realize is that balance is really important, like in everything. Because I've been to all kind of extremes. I mean, the sport that I did is totally extreme. It's all very. Highly charged masculinity, competitive, stronger, bigger, win, you know, all that stuff. And I got that competitive drive or ego or whatever it is, but it's tempered now. You know, I just use it when I need it. So I'm conscious about my health and I love to exercise. So it's not really a discipline. I guess it is, but it's not a hard work for me to go and to exercise and to eat well, because I want to. I want to feel good. And if I don't do it, I don't feel as good as I feel now. I feel great. I'm 62 years old coming up, and a lot of my friends, I mean, some of them are not here. And then the other ones are like, oh, it sucks to get old, right? I'm like, no, I'm enjoying this. I'm feeling good. I'm looking forward. There's more adventures to come, and I feel great, you know, and that's all because I've come to a point of balance. So, yeah, sometimes I drink some alcohol, sometimes I eat some ice cream or whatever, because I want to experience life in all its parts, but it's in moderation.
But you also, I mean, your how you view the situation in life. I mean, 4 years ago, the world totally changed. I mean, for me, it changed. I mean, it's always been upside down, but it kind of started to play out a drama that we never have seen before.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I think a lot of things that people kind of become aware of is things that I've been aware of for a very long time, like more than 20 years. And I knew exactly what was happening when it was happening, which is kind of a bit, you know, almost like a panicking feeling, because like I want to tell everyone, but nobody really got it at first. But I believe this kind of had to happen. Like the trauma of what happened and the realization in the aftermath that things are not the way that you thought they were, quite clearly, unless you're totally asleep at this point. I mean, people were trusting the government and trusting what they heard on TV, and then now they realize they've been lied to. That's like a big shake-up. And I think for things to change, there has to be a shake-up and there has to be a bit of trauma in order. Otherwise, people won't look at anything differently. They will just keep going through life with the same perspective. Something needs to shock and change you. And, I mean, if you look at your life, normally when there was some real shock and trauma is when you question things. And then from these questions, maybe you came to a new realization and a new perspective. So that's why I think all this kind of upheaval is going on. And a lot of things which has been hidden or people couldn't see or didn't see or didn't want to see is like coming to the surface for people to kind of digest and do whatever they will with it.
Yeah. But do you think, you're in a very fantastic place at the moment. How do you see, the closest 5 years, what do you think will happen?
What do I think will happen in the next 5 years?
Yeah. Or maybe like the next.
Will happen next. Whatever is the collective focus. Like we're all co-creators. Yeah, you're creating your own life to some degree, your own reality, but then you're also, that's part of the total reality. Yeah. So it depends. It's like your own life is a microcosm of the macrocosm of the planet, and the planet is a microcosm of the universe, and so on and so on and so on. So it's all the same thing. So it's the future will be like what we as a collective create and focus on. And that's why there's a lot of shaking up going now, because people need to realize that the way things are is not the best way, and there's possible more positive futures available. And then when people focus on that more, it's more likely to happen. There's a lot of things hidden from us that could, if they came to the forefront, it wouldn't take this planet long to be like, probably never be a utopia, but it could be much better than it is now. I mean, we could have free energy, free transport, we could grow crops in the desert. I mean, it's endless, the things that we could do. You could drive a car across the United States on a tank of water. How do I know that? Because it's been done. Many of these things have been done, but all this stuff is kind of hidden away because it doesn't serve the powers that are controlling right now. But my vision is that those powers lose control and they start to become irrelevant, and we move in a different way. Not that you have to go on the streets and protest or fight or any of that, because that's just more of what they do. You know, we've got to do it in a different way. We've got to do it in realizing our potential and focusing that potential on a more positive future. And that's the way that we do it, you know? It's like, if you don't like McDonald's, how would we make the McDonald's close down? Do we need to go and smash it and burn it down? No, we need to slowly stop going and buying the burgers. Stop investing in this system. Stop investing in the McDonald's burgers. And then they got two choices. McDonald's go out of business or change the healthy menu. So it's like the same with anything. So just like be aware of all the negative things that's going on, but don't let it take you off the positive path of thinking, you know? Fear is like the main thing, the main negative emotion that's projected at us all the time. So yeah, I think you shouldn't stick your head in the sand. You should be aware of what's going on in the world, but believe there's a better future and don't focus on the, you know, very easy to fall into divisions of this is good and this is bad and I support this side and I don't like that side. And then you're just kind of falling into a trap that's not helpful.
Is there anything to be afraid of?
No, it's all a big game. It's all a big joke. Have fun. Don't be afraid. Really? I believe it. I've seen it. I mean, I've done a lot of different experiences with psychedelics, and I've seen that. And then all the if you read a lot of ancient spiritual texts, they're all telling you that, like, you know, there's no beginning and end. There's no death to be scared of. I mean, just a little episode of using this physical vehicle, but you still exist. Your essence exists always. So, yeah, I think try to enjoy your life and try to make whatever positive effect you can with your life on people around you.
Yeah. You've been doing quite a lot of ayahuasca.
I haven't done a lot. I haven't done any ayahuasca actually now for 5 years. But I did go through a period where I did quite a lot of ceremonies and work with ayahuasca, and that was amazing for me to like pull out a lot of things I didn't even know it was there. You know, we've got these things in life, traumas or whatever it is in your subconscious that kind of limiting, and it helped me bring some of that stuff out. It helped me like vision and see that what we perceive is just a micro sliver of everything. And I saw the construct behind the computer screen, if you like, of geometric shapes made of numbers and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just a game, really.
So what would you say?
I don't know if anyone ever, you play Monopoly in Sweden?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we play Monopoly when you're a kid and you got the whole family there and everyone's playing Monopoly. And it starts to get pretty serious sometimes, right? People get upset or whatever. Because they're in the game, right? They're in the game. They start to think the game's real, and it's only a board with some pieces, right? This is like super hologram virtual reality game. So you really get lost in it. But it is that. That's what it is. So maybe we shouldn't take it too seriously.
No. But what would you say that ayahuasca is, and what does ayahuasca do for you as a person?
Well, ayahuasca, it's a combination of two plants that the indigenous people in South America, like Brazil and Peru and places like that, in their traditions, they use it as a medicine, and they use it for quite a few things, but kind of like a visionary medicine as well. So it works on different levels. And it helps the person to connect to nature, I guess. I mean, these plants are older than us. They have the wisdom of nature inside them. So it's kind of, it's a spiritual journey, really. I mean, psychological, spiritual, I guess. You have visions. And I have done 3 camps in Costa Rica over a few years, and each camp I had 20 people that came to do the experience with me. And I guess, I mean, the idea was I already did it. I was on this journey myself. I did a few things, a few sessions of ayahuasca, and helped me with looking at some situations and depressive anxiety problems. I had things like that. And I spoke about it on a few podcasts, and then this facility, Soltara in Costa Rica, got in touch and asked me if I'd like to host a camp there and bring some other people to do the medicine work. And at first I didn't really want to do it because I didn't want to go there as, you know, Dorian Yates, Mr. Olympia and all that. I just want to be anonymous. Like what I did before, I did it in Spain, and it was like up in the mountains, and the most people didn't speak English and nobody had a clue who I was. And I was just there for my own, you know, my own reasons, right? And it's kind of like the whole Mr. Olympia thing is a bit like an actor or something. It's like an alter ego that you've got, and sometimes you just want to put it aside, you know. So I wasn't sure how that would go, but anyway, I did in the end, and we took like 20 people there, and we did the whole week together, and that was a great experience. for everyone there, and it's really a bonding experience, a growing experience. And I did two more camps, so I did like three camps, and a lot of the people were there, or they were obviously already curious, but they were maybe thinking it's not for them because this is something a bit far out, or this is something hippie-ish, or I don't know, but Dorian's doing it, and he's from the gym world, and, you know, so it's okay, maybe. So a lot of people came that maybe were sitting on the fence or wouldn't have come, which was great, and I'm in touch with a lot of people, and all of them, you know, they're changed people and on a continued journey of self-discovery or improvement or whatever you want to call it. So it was great, and but it got to the point where I kind of feel I'm in a place where I got what I needed from it, and it's not that I want to go back for, you know, it's not entertainment or anything. It's actually quite really physically demanding. You vomit and sweating, and you don't eat a lot and all this stuff during the week. It's very challenging as well. Psychologically, there's a lot to process. And I got a lot of respect for it. But yeah, I'm at the point where I think I've kind of taken what I need. Maybe I change my mind next year or something, I don't know. But I can say that the most common thing that I heard from the people there is this is the most life-changing thing that I've ever done. And I've heard that over and over again. It usually starts with the person is just, it comes into your consciousness, you know? Like, you start seeing things or hearing things, and what is this ayahuasca? And then maybe there's something that's drawing you towards it, and there's something that it will benefit you with.
But I'm just thinking of like CBD and ayahuasca. Most of the people think of it as drugs. And for me, it's the more I learn, the more I read, and the more I experience myself, I know this is medicine. And like you said, it's been plant, known for...
Yeah. Plant grows from the ground.
Yeah.
You know, God-given, nature-given, however you want to say it, it's growing, just like the mushrooms with the psilocybin. It's growing from the ground. And humanity has used these plants as a tool, religious, spiritual tool, for, we don't know, you know, forever, since mankind has been here, and we don't even know how long we've been here. So, and many religions have been based on, and many what they call mystery schools, you know, like super high level initiate schools, like the Elysium in Greece for 2,000 years. Initiates were going there to meet God, basically, they called it, to meet God and to learn these secrets, to die and be born again. And on pain of death, they were not to reveal those secrets. And there's a lot of, they had like bushels of barley. So what it was, it's a parasite that grows on barley called ergot. And if you synthesize ergot, you get LSD. So these kind of psychedelics were used in all these ceremonies for thousands and thousands of years. It's meeting God. That's what they used to say. And they couldn't reveal the secrets to anyone outside. That's simply what they were doing. And it's, you know, whether it's the anointing oil or whatever they use in religious texts, it's always plant medicines. So they're a great tool to learn. And fortunately now some money is being put into research on, you know, what happens to people's brains when they're on LSD or psilocybin. And it's all been looking very positive.
And the thing we're doing, the interview with you, which I think is so fantastic, is this. We talked about the mind, because the more I'm into the mind, it's something. I mean, it's not like separate. We're a body, we have a brain, but this mind.
The mind. And, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And you.
Like everything, everything is like inside of you. Maybe it doesn't. Sense, but everything is inside of you, and everything's all one thing that goes infinitely big and infinitely small, and I don't even have the words to describe it. I'm just doing my best from what I saw, felt, whatever. Again, you struggle for words with the experience of psychedelics because it doesn't really fit into, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really fit into normal explanations, but you do your best.
But isn't that one of the big secrets that the people in charge are trying to hide from us? It's like they want to make us believe that everything is outside. I need a new port, Porsche, a new car. I mean,
absolutely. But you know, I used to see it as good and bad, and you know, dark and light or whatever. But all the things that are there to, like, you know, take you away, once you realize and you see it all, is like, you then it just reinforces to me how important it is to go look inside, because everyone's trying to make you not look there. So why is that? Why they don't want you to look there? Why they don't want you to smoke cannabis? Because it makes you think differently.
What happens when you think differently?
Then the box which they try to put around your head doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, so this, I mean...
cannabis, I was listening to somebody who was in some of the CIA mind control experiments that they were doing. And while they were doing them, they were allowed to drink alcohol, cocaine, heroin, pretty much anything. It didn't matter. But they were not allowed to smoke cannabis because when they did that, it didn't work. You know? So it allows you to think differently as well as psychedelics. If you've had a psychedelic experience, your perspective and your range, ability to think is forever changed. Like it's changed in your DNA or something's changed. And you don't look at things the way you used to. I made a joke when I was on podcast one time, like, before somebody becomes a politician, they should have to do an ayahuasca ceremony. Because it would make them realize they're one with everything. So they wouldn't see any reason to be selfish and, you know, they would want to help the collective because they know they're part of it and it's all one, and they would think differently. So it was a joke, but I'm kind of serious as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would look very different. I mean, yeah. I mean, can just imagine.
That's what they did in the Temple of Eleusis, basically that. The high initiates, the people in charge, the philosophers, the teachers, they were the ones that were, you know, allowed to go and do this stuff. But, I think everybody should be able to do it.
There's also one other thing. You were walking in barefoot shoes.
Yeah, I was. I've been walking barefoot anyway because I like to connect to the ground. But, you know, you can only do it. I've got grass outside on the beach, so I can walk there. But I had a problem with my toe as well, so... I just saw them advertised and I thought, that, you know, sounds good. Let me give them a go. And they're really comfortable. And yeah, you feel the tendons and the muscles in your foot are actually working rather than just being sitting there. So yeah, I'm enjoying them. I've got two pairs now. But yeah, you know, some things which is free. Put your feet on the ground. This is free. You're getting negative ions or antioxidant power, if you like, from the ground, and it's free, you know. Get outside in the nature, connect, try to look at the sun if you can. All these things are free, and they help you. You know, we're so disconnected. It's important to connect back to what's real, like the nature.
Do you use sunscreen, Dorian?
No, I don't use sunscreen because I think it's bullshit. The sun.
I knew it, but I wanted to ask.
Okay, it's come on, guys. It's ridiculous. They got us afraid of the very thing which brings life. Yeah. What a con job is this? What a mind control program is this? Don't go out in the sun, or if you do, cover yourself with petroleum-based chemicals that go through your skin, and they're more likely to give you cancer than anything else. And now also you're cutting yourself off from all the beneficial rays of the sun that help you to produce vitamin D, and that's like hundreds of positive effects on your body from the sunlight. We need it. And if it's too hot in the sun and start to burn, get out of the sun. I mean, that's it. That's it. It's ridiculous. It's fear again. It's fear. People are scared to go in the sun. I mean, I used to be like this myself. You know, I'm not saying like my current perspective or knowledge has always been that way. You know, I've been through a lot of these things myself. So, but now I'm like looking and thinking, you fool, man. Well, you were scared to go in the sun and you put all that cream on. And yeah, I used to burn because I'm from England. I wasn't used to the sun. And in England, my diet was probably quite low in antioxidants. I came to Spain. I started eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and slowly increased my time in the sun. And I haven't worn sunscreen for 10 years. And I was like, trust me, I'm like white as a milk bottle, really white, English, never been in the sun. Right. So I used to burn, but I don't now. I got used to it, and I make sure I keep my diet high in antioxidants because it kind of protects the skin so that when the heat hits it, it doesn't immediately start to get inflamed. It has time to, like, respond, I guess. That's my take on it anyway. But, yeah, I don't use sunscreen. If the sun's damaging, then just don't be in the sun then. Get out, like, if it's too much. I think that's about it. It's just common sense. I love the sun.
Oh, me too. But if we put this together, I mean, what would you like to say to people for the future?
What I like to say to people is you are much more than you think you are. You can do much more than you think you can. We all can. I can. We all can. And you're not insignificant. You know, we're all part of this one thing. It's all kind of a game we're playing. It's all an illusion. And try to treat other people the way you want to be treated yourself. It just makes sense. Just try to be positive. Do something positive with yourself, with your time. And believe in yourself. I know it's difficult, but believe in yourself because we're all the same spark, you know? We're all the same thing. Just maybe somebody else was more focused or more talented in one direction. But there's all amazing things that we can do, and we can bring them into our life, the things that we want, if we focus on them.
Mm. Thank you so much.
And, Take care of each other.
Yeah, that's very important. And you have your own podcast, Dorian.
Yeah, I just started one, Shadow Talk. So I've had a few guests on. I'm just doing like one a month at the moment because I don't want to, it's not my ambition to be really a full-time podcaster or something. I just want to have chats with people that are interesting and inspiring. So you can find that on YouTube on the D1.
Yeah, but I'm thinking that I could put a link in the end of in the text so people know that you have.
If you send me all your info, I can give it to my team because I got a team that's doing my podcast. So you can speak because I'm just pretty useless when it comes to technical stuff, you know.
Oh,
let else do that, all right?
Thank you so much, Dorian.
Oh, I hope your listeners enjoy it, and let me know what they think.